Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Republicans Christine Dudley and Kathy Posner, Democrat Mary Hardigan, and liberal columnist Salim Muakil of In These Times. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base on State Street, that great street in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, our email address is btbtalk@aol.com. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, www.beyondthebeltway.com. Well, political wags all over the country are beginning to say now that there may now be a slight opportunity for Hillary Clinton to get back into this race for the Democratic presidential nomination. Many feel that she has been handed an issue on a silver platter by Barack Obama. There are some suggesting that his comments a week ago in San Francisco, which have become the fodder of most of the political discussion in America over the last 72 hours, that this may be a potential turning point in the campaign. This could be the beginning of the end of Barack Obama. Some people are going that far. If you have been living in a cave and don't know exactly what we're talking about, at a fundraiser in San Francisco a week ago, Barack Obama was offering his assessment on some of the difficulties that he's been having with some sectors of the voting population. And he was putting in context, at least he thought, an interpretation of why there may have been there's frustration in small town Pennsylvania, which obviously he is currently engaged in a hotly contested battle with Hillary Clinton for the primary that comes up in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania a week from Tuesday. And he said, quote, "You go into these small towns in Pennsylvania, and like a lot of small towns in the Midwest, the jobs have been gone for 25 years. And it's not surprising that they get bitter. They cling to guns or religion or antipathy to people who aren't like them, or anti-immigrant sentiment or anti-trade sentiment as a way to explain their frustrations." End of quote. I want to get everybody's reaction to that. Salim Muakil, first of all, welcome to the show. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you, Bruce. Good to be here.
One of the major editors of In These Times, one of the country's leading progressive periodicals.
And a talk show host on WVON.
And a talk show host on WVON. And also someone that really has been chronicling the rise of Barack Obama for quite some time. Reaction to the reaction.
Well, it's understandable. I mean, of course, Hillary Clinton, Senator Clinton, sees a way to, as you put it, to get herself back into contention, serious contention. She sees an opening, and it's a good opening. It hits Barack Obama where he's particularly vulnerable. However, I don't think it's going to be any kind of serious momentum changer. If the right controversy didn't do it, this certainly won't do it.
Mary Hardigan is with us. She is a lawyer. She's our Democrat this evening. And your reaction to the reaction and the statements?
Well, you started off right, Bruce. Some people, and it's the chattering classes who are, you know, the talk show hosts and the Republican commentators and Mary Matlin, who thinks that Dick Cheney is the greatest guy in the world.
Not just Republicans. Now, keep in mind that we are talking about this story because it was revealed to the public by the Huffington Post, which is left of center, which in the past has been very supportive of Barack Obama.
And let's look at Pennsylvania, the Beaver County Times, the Bloomberg Press International, Butler Eagle, the Chamberg Public Opinion, the Connersville Courier, the Doylestown Intelligencer or Record, the Hazleton Standard, the Wayne Independent, and more newspapers than I can name in today in Pennsylvania weren't even talking about it. And today in Pennsylvania, the Allentown Morning Call, which serves Lehigh Valley, and the Scranton Times Tribune both endorsed Obama. People in Pennsylvania, just like people all over the Midwest, they're angry about Republican mismanagement of the economy and the war in Iraq.
So
they're bitter about
your
costs and burdens.
Before you give your whole argument here, Counselor, just to get to the point here, I mean, you think this is... This is a tempest in a teapot. Not serious.
I think it's completely created.
Christine Dudley is here, longtime Republican activist, used to be the chairman of the head of the executive director of the Republican Party in Illinois. Your reaction to this, and do you see it as a tempest in a teapot, or is it perhaps the beginning of the end?
Well, I don't think we can measure the beginning of the end. As Salim had pointed out 3 weeks ago while we were talking about the Reverend Wright, and I want to come back to that because there was some significant conversation in the Chicago press about Reverend Wright this past 2 days when he presided over the funeral of a
Eugene Pinchem.
A local political leader and revered lawyer. But we didn't hear anything about the Reverend Wright this weekend in the chattering classes, as it's been referred. However, do I think these comments are? And I am about, and I have been accused of being, God forbid, a moderate Republican. I think that those remarks were incredibly elitist. And here's why. I think that he was in a private group speaking in San Francisco to a group of donors. You take a different tone when you speak to donors. That's just the reality of the situation. Number one. Number two, Barack Obama has lived most of his adult life in a very elitist arena, being that of higher education. And many people refer to higher education communities as the ivory tower. It is very easy to be liberal when you are on a college campus. It is very easy to have an elitist attitude. It's part of the pathology. You're not affected by recession. You have professors who are tenured who continue to have their jobs irregardless of. You have students attending these elite institutions to which he went to, either on government loans, or it just doesn't impact as much.
I do think it was very elitist. I want to bring Kathy. Folks, we have a fourth guest here. Kathy Posner into our conversation. Your reaction, and again, your reaction to the reaction.
Okay. First, I want to say that when Barack Obama was an Illinois state senator, he was my state senator.
Congratulations.
But he never cared anything about my end of town because I lived in the Gold Coast. He only showed up
personal. Now, what about the issue that we asked
about? I'm absolutely against Barack, but I think that the words were taken out of context. If you look at the rest of the speech, it makes sense in what he's saying. What scares me about his speech is when he's saying how he's going to provide health care for every American. Because I'm worried about who's going to pay for that. It's going to be me who's going to have to pay for it for everybody. But I think the reaction is wrong because you have to look at all of the words.
Hillary Clinton, per her response, obviously she's jumped on this yesterday at a rally in Philadelphia. She said, quote, Pennsylvania doesn't need a president who looks down on them. They need a president who stands up for them, who fights for them, who works hard for their futures, their jobs, and their families. And today in Scranton, Pennsylvania, what people are looking for is an explanation. What does he really believe? How does he see people here in the neighborhoods throughout Pennsylvania, Indiana, North Carolina, other places in the country? And I think that what people are looking for is some explanation. He has simply not provided one. I think his comments were elitist and divisive. 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont, live from Chicago. Your reaction to the brouhaha involving Senator Obama and his comments about bitterness.
You've heard the horror stories about meth. It's a powerful, dangerous, and highly addictive drug that's having a serious impact on our communities and horrible effects on families across the country. But there is reason for hope. Treatment for meth addiction is available, and it works. All it takes is someone to care. If you know someone using meth, get involved and help them get on the path to recovery. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
and take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart. Go Red. The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease. Go Red. To Go Red for Women and give your heart the love it deserves.
From Seattle, Washington to Bakersfield, California, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. 1-800-723-8289 is the telephone number. Salim, when you look at the context of what Barack Obama was talking about, is this, in your view, another example of maybe a conversation, an elongated conversation that Barack Obama wanted to have? And one of the lessons we learn in presidential campaigns is you really can't have those type of discussions because right. It can't be told in sound bites. It's a little too
nuanced.
Little too nuanced.
Nuances.
There's no place for nuance in campaigns.
Absolutely. That's why it really was remarkable, his speech that he made in Philadelphia, because it was full of nuance and it was really a remarkable speech for that reason. I don't think he's quite learned that, although this was supposed to be off the record, this fundraiser gathering.
Nothing is off the record
anymore.
Yeah,
that's what all of us have to learn.
It's another lesson he has to learn.
Right.
But is it similar to, and again, some would say, you know, he maybe should have learned this the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Because is this similar in some context that the interview that he was giving, I believe it was to a Sacramento, California newspaper, when he made the reference a couple of months ago about Ronald Reagan, that Reagan had some pretty good ideas and he was a transformative thing, and then the Democrats all jumped
very
on
similar
and said,
to that.
You know, oh my God, you said something positive about Ronald
exactly,
Reagan.
Exactly, exactly.
Because that too was nuanced.
Right.
It was in context.
It was in context.
In a discussion of bright, intelligent, adult people, these type of conversations would...
But they don't play well on the campaign trail, and that is
the problem.
Do
you agree with that?
Yes, I would, and I think it goes to the idea that he is used to those kinds of conversations because of where he's worked and who he is associated with.
But do you agree? I mean, is it good for the body politic for a candidate to be penalized for trying to have broader conversations, even though this conversation about the bitterness was not meant to be an elongated conversation. But again, the points of what he was saying about Ronald Reagan, the points that he certainly was talking about in his nuanced speech in Philadelphia about race, I mean, these are big, broad issues, and I can't remember too many campaigns where, you know, where those type of scabs are pulled off a sore.
I think the idea of him being penalized may be inappropriate, but the bottom line is that this is a long campaign, and more is coming out, and people still don't know who he is. And to Kathy's point, you know, some of the other things that he talked about afterwards are probably the things that people are focused on, but it is the idea that the media is going to chase the story and chase it and beat it to death in the Clinton.
What about the way that the Clinton people reacted?
Oh, they hopped on it.
They know what to do with it. I mean, absolutely. Just as they did with the Reagan thing. They take something like that.
Remember,
and
we're still in a Democratic primary.
Well, to use your words, Bruce, I think that the people in small town Pennsylvania are capable of listening to a bright, clever, nuanced conversation about issues that are important to them. So I think that they're incredibly hardworking and optimistic, and they're very patriotic. But who can look around at what the national approval numbers are? 75% of Americans don't think our country is going in the right direction, and we're supposed to ignore that and put on a smiley, happy face because that's the only thing that can happen in a presidential election, that you can't tell people the truth.
We have phone calls, lots of them already. A full board. Steve in Chicago, listening to us on our flagship WLS. Go ahead, Steve.
Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to ask the question or kind of throw it out there. Does anybody ever really think that Barack Obama was just basically speaking the truth the way he really feels?
Yes.
This wasn't a misstep. I truly believe, as most of the people on the left, that they believe that people who cling to guns or who have guns or want to protect their families, that they're fools, that they're crazy people, or people who go to church, that, you know, you were crazy. I mean, I truly believe that he believes this.
Well, he didn't say that. He didn't say that people who do this are crazy. He just said that they cling to these to guns and
because they're bitter.
Well, no,
here's what he was saying. So you get mad, so you cling to religion and you cling to guns. That's what he said.
No, that's not what
what he said.
He said you tend to vote on social issues rather than on your own interests. The point he was making is that people vote on hot button emotional social issues rather than on their political interests. Because if you do polling in those towns and ask them what their issues are, they check down the list of all the things that are the Democratic issues. But then they can, because of how normal people are, how I am, how my neighbors are, that there are times in your life where you can really be pushed by some of these hot button issues.
Well, maybe Barack Obama made Bruce's point. In discussing the idea that you cling to religion and guns, that means you really aren't, he was saying, they aren't capable of having a nuanced conversation deeper than this. Because they effectively go to these areas. And I think that's probably, I mean, I'm from Indiana, and he was putting down Hoosiers in this story, too, in this statement, too. And I think Indiana.
A lot of small towns in Indiana. A
lot of small towns. Hey, Johnny Cougar, you know, I was born in a small town. And I think that this comment, and as much as it's going to have some impact in Pennsylvania, irregardless of the newspaper elite that has endorsed him, we haven't heard from the voters yet. And I think this comment's going to have some impact in Indiana, which where this race could come down
to. By the way, we should mention that obviously Barack Obama has been responding to it significantly. At first point, he sort of dug in that the contention Friday, had been obviously, not put in the proper context. He did say yesterday that he didn't say it as well as I should have. He told the Winston-Salem, North Carolina Journal that, quote, obviously, if I worded things in a way that made people offended, I deeply regret that. The underlying truth of what I said remains, which is simply that people who have seen their way of life upended because of economic distress are frustrated and rightfully so, end of quote.
Why is it the government? Why do Democrats always blame everything on the government? Why do people feel that they're entitled to everything and the government should take care of them? People should take care of themselves. In his remarks, he talks about how these people are betrayed by the government. The government isn't the one that's required to put food on your table every day and a roof over your head. The government might pass laws that can help you, but these people are talking about.
But the point that he made, at least in the initial comment, was that falling through the cracks of the Bush administration and the Clinton administration, that government has been bending over backwards, not considering the American worker, because they've been so focused on bigger, broader global world issues. And that's because, in my view, which goes back to the Clinton era, it goes back even before that, there has not been a serious discussion, explanation to the American voter, to the American worker, what on earth is meant by a global economy. What does that mean? It's never been fully explained.
Well, then let's just close our borders and let's only let the people who are here now be here, and let's not care what's going on in the rest of the world. That's essentially what you'd be saying.
Well, who's responsible for those attitudes? The government, the same government that you just recently dismissed.
No, he trashed the Clinton government, the Clinton administration. Well, he said they created
His point is that there's a lot of frustration in the country, a lot of frustrated people, and campaigns come and campaigns go, and there's a lot of rhetoric, but no one is addressing some of these frustrations that are there. Mary.
But boy, and you know, boy, I've had to listen for the last 8 years about how wonderful the free market is on Wall Street and how important financial services are. And boy, we got to let them compete. And these tremendous salaries that they're getting are just worth it because they're the engines of
the
market.
Right. They have a right. They work hard.
We've got to bail them out right now. My taxes and your taxes are bailing them out to make sure that they can continue their lifestyle. And the free market doesn't work so good when it comes time for big market
bailouts. They are not being bailed out to continue a lifestyle, Mary. And you know that, and I know that. That went to the deeper fiber of the economy as a whole.
They destroyed that fiber, and they're being rewarded for it. They were rewarded for it for eight years, and now they're being bailed out.
It was high flying in the go-go 90s, too.
Let us go to Sarah, listening to us in Bakersfield, California, on KERN. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. I apologize. I did not hear the speech about bitterness.
Well, nobody heard the speech. You could barely hear it. It was at a private event. Somebody caught it on a recorder. The actual recording is very poor, but it obviously has created quite a political storm. But your point?
My point is, far be it from Barack, after the last 3 weeks of hearing the bitter rhetoric of the Reverend, the great, honorable Reverend Rice, to actually open his mouth and talk about somebody being bitter and clinging on to religion. I guess if he has a gun, then maybe the Reverend Wright would be the epitome of the definition that he's describing.
Salim.
I don't quite understand. I think that Reverend Wright was expressing a sentiment that is very, very widespread in the black community. I don't think there's really... That's why a lot of black people were so amazed, really, that people thought this was such an extraordinary sermon, because it's really pretty much a commonplace in many black churches, and especially in black activist community, this is really nothing new.
Hello, am I still on the air?
So bitterness is something that people automatically would feel because of the history of this country and, you know, the racial history. So I don't think there's anything unusual.
Does it from a political standpoint here? And I'm going to ask the question, and I'm going to give you a chance to think about it. In fact, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to hold it afterwards. But I do want to take the essence of your question, Sarah, put it in a broader context and ask everyone to react to it. But it is the relationship between Barack Obama's statement about bitterness and at least the tone of bitterness as perceived by many people in the country, many of them white, but many people of all colors. And we'll talk about that when we come back. 1-800-723-8289. One of the things we're talking about in a presidential campaign: can you have really big, hot-button issues that really get discussed? Back shortly. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415 for a one-time professional fee American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415. From Austin, Texas to Boise, Idaho, you are listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. Our Democrat tonight is Mary Hartigan. She is an attorney in private practice. Also, Salim Mulkill is here. He is one of the senior editors of In These Times, one of the country's leading progressive periodicals. Kathy Posner is a civic leader in the Chicagoland area, former head of her own public relations firm. And Christine Dudley is here, former executive director of the Illinois Republican Party and a longtime political activist for Republican presidential candidates and campaigns. Quick question I have, and then we've got a full board of lights. Given the hyperbolic, what some people would describe as the bitter tone,
histrionic
tone of Reverend Wright's speech or sermons, which are now well known and part of the political
parts
landscape.
Of them are
parts of them.
Yes,
the more inflammatory
parts that have been heard
right
by the mainstream.
Our previous caller was trying to say, well, is that where Barack Obama sort of learned about bitterness? I mean, he then uses a term that describes, people that live in small towns, mm-hmm. and he uses the term bitter.
Yes.
I would think that a lot of people listening to the program, they would use the word bitter when they were describing
Reverend Wright.
Reverend Wright.
Yeah. I think they'll be
is
right. You know what? I think that you can someone like Barack, someone with a Harvard education who looks at populations in a certain way, could have really described that in much the same way, that a lot of black people, because of the history of this country, have bitter experiences and expresses itself in some of this religious histrionics. And I think that would have been a good description. I mean, it's a sociological description, and I think that, it's a kind of an abstract description, and that's when you get into trouble, when you use those kinds of abstract terms for personal relationships and personal problems that people have. They think that you're looking at them from a perch, from an elitist perch.
Because you know, it amazed me a few several weeks ago when the Ohio and the Texas primaries were over. There was this long stretch in this primary season. It was almost 6 weeks between that big primary, which was going to be make or break for Hillary Clinton. It was going to be where Barack Obama could have sealed the deal. He could have put the political nails in the coffin then. He didn't close the deal. He has not closed the deal on a couple of big things. And then everybody looked at, oh, my God, 6 weeks. You know, there's going to be a discussion of superdelegates. What are we going to do for 6 weeks? In that 6 weeks, there have been some, certainly this most recent one is a self-inflicted wound. But the right story filled that void. Mm-hmm. And really, we have a six-week period where Barack Obama has been almost exclusively on the defensive,
yes,
with the exception of the racist speech,
right,
which some would describe was reaction to a defensive position,
it was indeed,
which he turned around maybe in a positive way.
And I think he may turn this around in much the same way.
How does he do it? Because the image, the likability quotient, which Barack Obama was very, very high come Texas and Ohio, there's now questions about it. Mm-hmm. There's reasonable doubt about his judgment, why he stayed in the church for 20 years. Mm-hmm. There may be reasonable doubt about why he would give a speech even with allegedly no cameras around, something that he should have maybe been a little more sensitive to, how it could be played. We're seeing some chinks in the armor in a campaign that up until that point had been almost flawless.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think he's demonstrated an amazing ability to transmute these negative incidents into positive poll numbers. I was very concerned that the right incident might sink Barack Obama, but that speech and the way he responded to it since then apparently has satisfied enough people so that the poll numbers haven't dropped dramatically.
Well, Hillary's misstep on Bosnia and the sniper
helped that as well.
Hurt her more than
The poll numbers, Salim, that you're talking about are in the Democratic primary. I think one of the things that we've seen as a result of the Reverend Wright and some of these chinks in the armor, because it is the fact that there is no reason historically that John McCain should be even.
That's
with
true.
Whomever the nominee is.
Right.
That's true.
And I don't speak, I'm not saying because he's not a good candidate, he is. But my point is I'm talking about the historical perspective. We have seen his numbers become a little more solidified, and he is even both with Hillary and with Barack. So when we talk about the fact that he has assuaged some of this and moved forward, it is with the Democratic electorate in particular. And I think, Bruce, to your point, this is exactly Hillary Clinton's campaign, what they wanted and what they hoped for.
They
and
got
that
it.
6 weeks, they knew this opportunity could present itself. There's also a trial going on here in the city of Chicago about government corruption that Barack has been linked to, not personally. I'm just saying, but a key fundraiser for him. And I think they know just as much about Chicago politics in the Hillary camp. So they're also waiting for that shoe to drop, if there is a shoe to drop, and I'm not
Which
saying
has
there
not
is.
Been no.
There will be a shoe to drop. Patrick Fitzgerald, the U.S. attorney, just makes sure he has everything lined up perfectly before he indicts.
Well,
he
certainly
indicts.
Doesn't look good thus
they're
far.
They're gonna end
in
up
that trial.
Making deals, and Tony Rezko, the
but
man
it's
on
not,
trial.
But let's be clear here. It has not been directly linked to Barack Obama at this point. Let's put it in context.
At all.
We're going to go back to calls.
We're
going to go back to calls. After I'm going to make one assessment here, and you can think about it. We'll talk about it a little bit later on the program. The events of the last 72 hours, who have they helped? Who have they hurt? They obviously, I think, have helped Hillary Clinton because she's fighting for her political life. Obama's on the defensive. And one of his weaknesses appears to be, you know, let's call it Reagan Democrats, white ethnic Democrats in a state where there's a lot of them in Pennsylvania. So this is not a good time. The timing is not right. Here's someone else who I think has been helped by this. Mike Huckabee. I think that the issue of small towns and the issues of guns and religion has increased his attractiveness to be the running mate with John McCain, because that's an issue the Republicans cannot let go. Let's go back to Tucson, Arizona. Not back to, let's go to Tucson. where Ken is listening to us on POTUS 08 tonight, XM Radio. Go ahead. You're on the air, Ken.
POTUS 08. It's a great program.
It is.
Listen, I don't know why y'all are beating up on Obama so much. You know, he said, I mean, actually, I think what he said was kind of stupid. But it's just a fact. A lot of people, when they are down and out economically, when they are losing their jobs, anybody that knows anything about sociological history knows that people tend to look for easy scapegoats, and they do cling to issues. It was stupid to say it, but it's a fact. And I wish people would...
But how does it relate to religion and guns, though? I understand how that could manifest itself in opposition to illegal immigrants, because they are perceived to be the people that are taking their jobs. But how does it relate to religion and an affection for the Second Amendment? That's where I think the political issue is.
People latch on to the issues that happen to be big. For instance, immigration wasn't even on the board. I don't even know who brought it up. About a year and a half ago, it was a couple politicians. Nobody was talking about it, and all of a sudden...
What are you talking about? Everybody was talking about it.
No, they weren't. So about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, nobody was talking about it.
Well, I don't know. I don't know
where... From Nebraska?
This guy is from Arizona.
Oh.
They were talking about it in Arizona.
They always talk about it, but not like it's being talked about. Look at when the amendments were put in. But I'd like to hear some people talk about... You keep talking about Reverend Wright. Why doesn't anybody talk about Pat Hagerty or the guy that McCain called a spiritual leader? What's his name? Parsley, the guy that thinks it's American government's role to get rid of the Muslim faith.
Well, the main thing is that they were not John McCain's ministers. If they were, I think we'd be talking about that as well. Let's go to Greg in Chicago on WLS. You're on the air. Greg, go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call, Bruce. I'm an independent. When I look at the Obama set of comments out of Pennsylvania, it brings together a set of considerations, which are experience, judgment, character, arrogance.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at these issues one by one, and first, when I look at Obama's experience, I say... His experience in the legislature in Illinois didn't yield much. U.S. Senate didn't yield much. His judgment related to association with Farrakhan, Bel Airs,
who's related to Farrakhan?
Yeah, who's related to Farrakhan?
Did not Minister Farrakhan endorse him?
Oh. No, he spoke favorable words about him, but he didn't endorse him. And Barack was quick to condemn or denounce or something like that. I think he did a dual condemn, denounce, something like
that. What is the reaction? Thanks very much for your call. Salim, what is the reaction in the black community to the changing image of the Barack Obama campaign in the last 3 weeks, 4 weeks? Are people viewing Barack Obama as someone that's turned his back on Reverend Wright? Is he sold out? I mean, what's the sense?
There's some expression of that, that he went a little bit overboard in his attempt to correct the Reverend Wright's relationship to him. But I think by and large, most people understand his need to distance himself from those histrionic comments. So I don't think there's any change in their
opinion.
There's
no bitterness?
No.
He distanced himself just because of the campaign, that's all.
I want to get Mary's response, but we do have to pause. 1-800-723-8289. Lots of callers on the line. Got a couple of lines open waiting for you. 1-800-723-8289. From coast to coast and border to border, every Sunday night, I'm Bruce Dumont.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
From Newburgh, New York to Nogales, New Mexico, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. 1-800-723-8289 is the telephone number. Let us head to Ann Arbor, Michigan. Dave is listening to us on our flagship station, WLS. Go ahead, Dave.
Well, good evening. There's so many things to say, and I think the main point is that I think what Obama was speaking to was essentially that book, What's the Matter with Kansas, where what's discussed is the fact, what's discussed is that people from meager economic circumstances who you would think maybe would be voting Democratic are instead drawn to the Republicans because of God and guns and gay marriage and that kind of thing. And I think generally that's what he was saying. But I also have to comment on a couple of your guests there. You have one guest who keeps throwing out the word elitist to describe Obama and Democrats in general, and I wish I had the poem by Calvin Trillin with me, where he talks about how it's amazing that a Republican Party that gives tax breaks to the top 1% and coddles corporate raiders who get golden parachutes after destroying companies, these people can accuse the party that supports the poor and the middle class of being elitist. I just think that's amazing. And if I could also comment
Dave,
Hillary called Barack elitist.
Hillary, I mean, on our panel tonight, it was our Republican Christine Dudley, but Hillary Clinton called Barack Obama an elitist. And in context, I'm not going to debate the point of your interpretation of the Republican Party, but would you acknowledge, because when Barack Obama referenced these people who have been left behind, who don't have a spokesman, he wasn't just talking about the Bush administrations, both of them. He talked about the Clinton administration. It was the Clinton administration that drove NAFTA to completion.
Yep, absolutely.
So we really can't just pin it on a party here,
right?
Because the arrogance or this sense of being, you know, dispossessed and left behind, that's why I believe that the discussion and the debate over NAFTA and who was for it and who was against it is an important issue.
Yes.
Because no doubt NAFTA was a bad idea. It was a very bad idea.
Absolutely. And Hillary Clinton supported it, despite her efforts now to distance herself. It's very clear that she held meetings supporting it. Her husband obviously signed it. So
because Bill Clinton's goal was to change the image of the Democratic Party. He wanted the Democratic Party to be a little more open to business people. He wanted to raise more money, which he's done. That's why he's raised $500 million for his presidential library. I mean, this guy out-Republicans.
Yes.
When it comes to raising money.
Let me ask you a question. Is this Dave?
So yeah, this is yes. Dave. Dave in Ann Arbor.
Dave, yes. You're calling from Ann Arbor. Are you with the university?
No, I'm actually not, although I live within about a mile of the University of Michigan.
Do you think that the world in Ann Arbor is a lot different than the world in Detroit and some of the other areas that are probably
absolutely
similar to what he's talking about in Pennsylvania? I mean, you've got a really bad economy up there.
Yep.
And some
no
very
doubt
tremendous problems. I noticed today that Hillary Clinton went for the beer and shot last night.
Yeah.
Right.
Which she, you know,
she sipped it. She sipped the whiskey.
She went for the beer in the shot.
This was after talking about reaching out to the religious community.
Right.
She's now getting ready to.
Well,
do the
hey,
shot.
She was in Valparaiso. She was in a bar, you know, in northern Indiana. Let me ask you a question. Your opinion, had there have been a real primary in Michigan, who do you think would have had the edge in that primary, and why?
Well, that's a great question. The so-called primary, it was held back on January 15th, and, of course, Obama was not on the ballot. Hillary Clinton was on the ballot. She got 55%, but uncommitted got 40%, and that was considered to be mostly Obama supporters, along with some Edwards supporters, who actually showed up to vote uncommitted, even though their candidate wasn't on the ballot. So you have to believe that if Obama had been on the ballot, it would have been a close race, and especially now that he's become much better known. He's won a lot of primaries. Keep in mind, at the beginning of this season, Obama was actually running behind Hillary among African Americans.
Yeah.
But then after he showed he could win in Iowa, a basically all-white state, that really changed things, along with the comments that Bill Clinton made in South Carolina. So believe me, the black community in Detroit and Flint and some of those places would have really come out to support Obama, along with the liberal educated areas such as Ann Arbor, East Lansing, a few other places. So I think it would have been a close vote. I can't say for sure who would have won, but I think it would have been basically 50-50.
Dave, very good analysis. Thanks for your analysis. We really appreciate it. Let's go to Amy. I'm sorry, let's go to Bennett listening to us in Newburgh, New York on XM Radio. Go ahead.
Hi. You know, Dave was brilliant. He
must
was
be brilliant
because he said a lot of what I wanted to say. You know?
Well, Bennett, you have just confirmed. This is why we have some of the smartest callers in all of talk radio on Beyond the Beltway. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, he had exact sentences that I was kind of running through my head while I was on hold. So let me just add a few that I would have gotten to, I hope, had he had more time, which is that this whole issue of Barack offending people and being elitist is so trumped up. There is no way not to offend someone who wants to be offended. If you go up to someone and say to someone, oh, what a beautiful shirt, that person, if he wants to be offended, will say, hey, what's wrong with my pants? So I think that what happened here is that Hillary is the one, if this were a really intelligent country doing proper analysis of the way these candidates are behaving, she would be the one under the microscope for some of the most blatant, shameless pandering to these people in these small towns. Remember, Barack didn't say all people in all small towns are driven to religion. He said some people, and it was in response to why are you having trouble getting through to some people.
Keep in mind when you look at the mystique or the Clinton mystique, lowering the common denominator, that has been. That has been a way of winning elections in this country for a long, long time. And by the way, both parties practice it. Democrats may have more experience at it, but Republicans practice it as well. Lower the common denominator. Let's not spend too much time in a campaign talking about the big issues. Let's talk about the 30-second soundbite issues. And when someone inadvertently starts talking about a big issue, they end up on the defensive. 1-800-723-8289. Another full hour of Beyond the Beltway coming up after news. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415 for a one-time professional fee. American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go red.
To go red for women and give your heart the love it deserves.
My name is Teresa. I was a good mother. Then I tried meth and quickly became addicted. I abandoned my little girl to chase my next high. 8 months later, my daughter begged me to come home. Her plea made me enter drug treatment. My recovery wasn't easy, but I've been clean for 4 years now.
Meth is a powerful drug that affects everyone. If you know someone who's using, get involved. Treatment is available and it works. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Live from Chicago, this is Brooks Dumont. We continue with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Tonight featuring commentary by Republicans Christine Dudley and Kathy Posner, Democrat Mary Hardigan, and liberal columnist Salim Muakil of In These Times. Phone lines remain open at 1-800-723-8289. We've got a full board of calls. We'll go to them in just a moment. But Mary Hardigan, our liberal Democrat, is here. And you wanted to make a comment. We have been talking about Barack Obama. And we've been talking about his comments about small-town America, which have got him in hot water, and now on the defensive. And certainly Hillary Clinton was quick to jump on it. She thinks that this may be the way to get her back in the ball game. And one of the things that she has to do right now, obviously, and has for many, many weeks now, she has got to plant a seed in the brain of the superdelegates, and she's got to make a case that Barack Obama somehow is unelectable, even though he may have won more primaries, he may have won more popular votes within the primary process. Notwithstanding all of that, she's got to make the case to the superdelegates. It's her only way of getting back in the game. She's got to say Barack Obama is now unelectable because of the perception that he's created. She's already spreading the word that Reverend Wright is creating a problem for him in the general election against John McCain. She's now called him an elitist. She has said that he's not qualified to be commander-in-chief. So she's slicing Barack Obama up, and the question is she making him less and less electable every single day? Mary Hartigan, your response to that question, yeah. And then you want to put the controversy in context.
I actually think that she's making him, that he's a better candidate after this primary season. He has learned how to throw a sharp elbow, and the kind of thing that's going on now is actually mild compared to what's going to come down the road when the Republicans go after him.
Here comes the shadowy 527 argument.
Yeah. we have a lot of experience with that, don't we?
Well, but I think the Democrats also have their own shadowy 527.
In any event, I think that he is going to be a better candidate. He's going to be a tougher candidate. He's going to know how to really deal with these things. He's going to have a system in place. But I wanted to go back about small towns. I think we need to really look at Barack's experience at running in small towns. There are a lot of rural small towns in Illinois and in southern Illinois. And if you go on the internet and look at the electoral map of how he did,
that's yesterday.
Doesn't count.
And he won the primary. He won the primary based on his urban vote. And if you look across the board,
he won in Peoria and he won in Galesburg.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're not talking about yesterday here. We're talking about his appeal in small town America now, after this controversy. The question is, Pennsylvania is a lot of small towns. Indiana, other than Indianapolis, is virtually all small towns, although obviously, there's some...
South Bend, Fort Wayne, Evansville.
Fort Wayne, Evansville are fairly large towns. But the point is, he's got to make his case in small town America.
Well, and I think, and to the question of the general election, one of Hillary Clinton's strategic points on this whole, I've won the big states. And the big states are going to be important for the Electoral College in the competition in the fall. I think this further emboldens her on this point.
Yes.
James Carville, one of her own people and one of the vaunted members of the Clinton administration who's done a lot of work in Pennsylvania, says it's Pittsburgh and it's Philadelphia and then it's basically Arkansas.
Alabama and
Arkansas.
Right.
Deer hunter, country, all of those things. And I do think that this emboldens her argument. It also allows her the opportunity, although I think McCain has got the edge all around on this, with the Reagan Democrats, especially the veterans. These are small towns where the VFW hall is where you go for everything.
Right.
And I think she is I think this pencil, I'm going to be fascinated, and this is just purely me watching this as a spectator, if this all comes down to Indiana. At the end of the day.
Increasingly looks like that might happen.
Yes, the voice of America. And I think that will be an incredibly interesting sociopolitical experience to watch.
Especially because in Indiana you can pull a primary ballot for either party.
Right.
You don't have to be registered. It's an open primary.
It's an open primary.
Yep. Let's go to calls. Let's go to Augie listening to us in Sacramento, California, listening to us on XM Radio, POTUS 08. Go ahead, Augie. Angie, rather. I'm sorry. Angie.
That's okay. Yeah, I'm a first-time listener. I've never heard your show before. And
Well, welcome.
Yeah, thank you. I'm a little bit nervous.
We've been here since 1980, so you've got a lot of catching up to do.
Okay. Yeah, I'm a new XM listener, so I guess I'm just new to POTUS in the last couple of months. But
terrific.
Anyway, great show.
It's great service.
And, I'm a 40-year-old soccer mom who really for the last three elections has started to really pay attention to, you know, politics in this country, how political campaigns go. I feel much more invested in this election, and I am a Obama supporter. I read his book a couple years ago. We have been following him, of course, been following Clinton my entire adult life, pretty much. So I know her. But what's really frustrating me now is I'm really surprised to hear where we're going with this comment, because I am, you know, I'm no NBA and I'm no elitist. I'm a regular middle class American, and I can see that what he said was something, a commentary on American voter behavior. It's something that I myself noticed 8 years ago, that people will vote against their own best interests. They will, instead of, you know, paying attention, really close attention to the things that the policies that are going to affect their bottom line, their overall quality of life, they do tend to, you know, politicians know how to push people's buttons. And they push all those buttons. They push the guns button. They push the gay marriage button. They push the abortion button. And I think it's real hypocrisy and a real disservice to America that Hillary and McCain are going to try to, they know this to be true. They know he's just making commentary that is true. They know it, but they're going to try to spin it like he's somehow making, somehow this is condescending. So if you take it in a soundbite, you take it out of context, and you really don't know him at all, I guess, you know, haven't read about him, haven't really been following, then I guess you could be swayed that way. But
part of this, part also in a campaign, part of it is how you frame the argument and the images that you create in framing the argument. And one part of this, and this may sound very, very silly, but I'm going to say it anyway. The fact that this was said in a closed-door fundraiser in
San Francisco.
It underscores, it reinforces, an image that was planted in the body politic in 1984, and frankly, the Democrats have been stuck with it ever since, and that's part of this problem.
Yes,
yeah, I think it's so unfortunate, because I just think it's, yeah, I, you know, as a voter, again, really learning over the last three elections, some of the really unfortunate things that happen and how the American voter is duped.
They are duped all the time, and sometimes candidates, some of these wounds are self-inflicted. And there's something else, and this sounds very, very silly, but in the context of whether or not he's an elitist or not in small towns and all these other things, whoever suggested that Barack Obama go bowling should lose their job.
Absolutely.
You don't bowl wearing a tie. You don't bowl if you don't know how to bowl. That in itself, a picture's worth 1,000 words. That was worth more than 1,000 votes.
That was his Dukakis moment.
You got.
You've heard the horror stories about meth. It's a powerful, dangerous, and highly addictive drug that's having a serious impact on our communities and horrible effects on families across the country. But there is reason for hope. Treatment for meth addiction is available, and it works. All it takes is someone to care. If you know someone using meth, get involved and help them get on the path to recovery. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit GoRedForWomen.org.
Go Red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go Red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go Red.
To Go Red for Women and give your heart the love it deserves.
From Sacramento, California to Sharon, Pennsylvania, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. Let's go to Paula. She's driving along the highways and byways of the great state of Texas, listening to us on XM Radio tonight. Go ahead, Paula. You're on the air.
Hello, guys. I pretty much just have 2 points. I don't know how old you guys are, but do y'all remember the election that one of the big issues was the angry white male?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Newt Gingrich, that was 94 congressional election.
Right.
Okay, and I just find that funny because considering now they're talking about people being bitter, but they've made a whole big election of the angry white male. The next thing
is... By the way, that was also the angriness of the silent majority in 1968 by Richard Nixon. That silent majority was... There was a seething anger there, which was something also that had been addressed not only in 68, by George Wallace as well.
Right. And then my second point is when Obama first kind of came, I mean, he was going to run for president, people were saying, oh, we think he's a Muslim. We think he's a Muslim. We think he's a Muslim. Okay, then Reverend Wright came out, and they were like, oh, no, he's not a Muslim. He's going to this radical black church where you have this, it's like almost close to being a cult. And how could he go there for 20 years? And, and then with this last statement, he pretty much kind of put religion in the place actually where it belongs. And they're like so surprised that, oh, my goodness, he's not this cult member of the United Church of Christ. He still has a brain. And it's just funny because for a certain group of people, no matter what he does, it's never going to be right. And it's unfortunate that particular group has a lot of play in the news media. It's really sad, but it's
no, true. It's not. News media is liberal Democrat. So he's going to get away with stuff that McCain could never say.
Dan Rather wouldn't have got fired when he brought up the fact that
for goodness sakes, Paula,
drug test and didn't show up. And anybody else, he would have been at Leavenworth for being AWOL. And
no,
Dan Rather brought it up.
But,
he didn't. Maybe he should have checked more the facts. But he was off the air.
But in this particular case, let's keep in mind this is happening in the context of a campaign.
Right.
Hillary Clinton is the one that's calling him an elitist, that's saying that he's out of touch, that's saying that he has been condescending. She has decided, or Bill has decided, or that campaign has decided, aha, he has now shown his true colors. He not only has bad judgment because he sat in the right church for 20 years, so they've taken the chink in the armor about judgment. Now they're challenging his elitism, whether he's really one of the boys or not, whether
right.
he can go
and
out
and to,
and seriously, when I talk about bowling is silly. It is absolutely silly. We shouldn't be deciding that. But the fact is that picture is worth 1,000 words. Because people are talking about it. The late night comics talk about it. It gets played over and over again. It reinforces an image that this is a guy that, goes bowling with, who's first of all, has probably never gone bowling before.
Okay, and here's another, something else. It's kind of stereotypical, but it's there, and I know this is kind of stereotyping, but a lot of black people don't bowl. I mean, we really don't. And then another thing,
he should have never gone to the lanes then. You're right. A lot of black people don't bowl, and he should have continued that tradition.
And George,
he wasn't going to get him any more votes and was going to lose him.
Right, we got to move on. But listen, thanks very much for your call. We do appreciate it. Let's go to Joplin, Missouri. We have Jim listening to us on KZRG in the boyhood home of Bob Cummings. Go ahead, Jim.
Hi. Hey, thanks for taking my call. I've got a question for your panel. Does anybody there understand what the word antipathy means?
Yes.
And the reason that I ask that, because most of the people that I have talked to don't know what the word really means. It means disgust, extreme ill will. In the last part of Obama's comment, that's a racist comment. When he makes the statement that we hold antipathy towards people that don't look like us, that's the part of his comment that really upsets me.
Well, I don't see why it should, because xenophobia is something that you find expressed all in many groups. I mean, everyone has a sense of in-group, out-group.
I don't care whether it's expressed or not. You're talking about a presidential candidate that said that the small-town voter is filled with antipathy towards people that don't look like them. Now, the people that don't look like me, some are. And I am a white middle class.
By the way, Jim, couldn't you also? I mean, he didn't include it, but let me include it in here. Couldn't you also say that may be true, that there's an antipathy that some people in small town America have for people who live in big cities, and vice versa?
I can only respond to that from personal experience. And my personal experience is that really doesn't hold true. But wouldn't you say that?
No, but Barack Obama was talking in a larger sociological sense, and your personal anecdotes, of course, don't always apply. But if you look at the literature, you find that much of what he was saying is that people who have been embittered by economic downturns and whatnot often turn to xenophobic expressions or an unnatural attachment to things like guns and anti-immigrant fervor because it expresses their frustration.
Attachments. Yeah. I mean, those are not unnatural attachments. Those are they may be geographical attachments. They may be racial attachments.
Yes. Well, yeah.
Whenever you say that a person has animosity towards a person that does not look like them, he is in effect calling the small town white voter a racist. No, and no. I believe that is offensive as anything that he could say. I think that he proved it in his speech when he was defending Reverend Wright and defending the fact that older African Americans are racist. And that, I think that his speech was a total defense of black racism, and there is no excuse.
Well, that's really a stretch there. That's really a stretch there, my friend.
On either side.
I don't see how you could interpret that. But I understand your anger about the antipathy comment. But I think if you look at it in the sense that he was making the comments in this larger sociological sense, you can understand what his point was.
Jim, thanks very much. We do appreciate your call. Let's go to Mike in Youngstown, Ohio, listening to us on WKBN in Ohio, where I know we've got a lot of listeners in Western Pennsylvania that listen to the Big 57 as well. Go ahead, Mike.
No, this is Alan.
I'm sorry, Alan. Go
no
ahead.
No problem. Hey, I have to tell you, no, thank you, Bruce and panel. I have to tell you, I was really looking forward to voting for a president who transcends race, exudes intelligence and experience, but who might not have been black enough for the black voters. That man would have been Colin Powell, who for some reason isn't answering the call that's being made on many talk radio shows. Barack, though, cannot be called elitist. He's expressing the same view I hear on our local black talk radio, of whom several of the hosts are also ministers in church. These people, as much as I love them, are still looking for reparations for slavery. They want their 40 acres and a mule that were promised them, plus interest. Now, white voters have turned to Barack because of our absolute disgust with the way the white politicians have been running this country. But just turning to a man of another color isn't going to do it. If that man has such a liking for the African problems that he's going to take us out of Iraq and put us into Darfur. We can't just change color to change his country. We have to let
When did you hear that? What policy prescription indicated to you that was Barack's intention?
Just the fact of the church he goes to, that when the chips were down, he made the I Had a Scheme speech, in which he changed from somehow being the Teflon president who could fluff off all those racist remarks that are being made in his church, which I can believe. I can believe he can ignore that. But how in the world does his
still
extend to his impressionable young children that he takes to that church? How can they not develop those same attitudes towards the white race?
See, you know, sir, your assumption that those remarks were racist are not shared by many people, and I think that they should, you should consider that. A lot of people don't think what Reverend Wright said was racist. And if you deconstruct and contextualize much of what he said, I'm sure that you would understand and agree that they were not racist. Well, they may express a certain radical view, but certainly they're not racist.
Well, let's just go beyond that too. And I have this same problem with Hillary and all progressives. Their economic schemes are going to completely break this country. We have their idea of a balanced budget is to take every billion that was wasted in this godforsaken war and turn it into useless social programs, into turning into carbon taxes and other things that are going to ruin whatever hope we have for getting energy out of our own ground. We have a real problem. We have three candidates that are not worth electing to office, and God help this country if we don't get a viable third party rising up before this election, or we're in a heck of a lot of trouble.
Who would have been your candidate, sir?
As I said, Colin Powell would have been my candidate, along with Ron Paul as his vice president.
Okay.
That's what we need. We need a good,
like
solid
that.
Conservative
like
government
myself.
And somebody who knows what the horrors of war are.
Yeah. All right, we're going to move on. By the way, last week somebody called up and suggested that Condoleezza Rice
and
would
McCain.
Be a good running mate with McCain. I said that would be a bad idea. However, a poll in New York State with McCain and Condi Rice as the running mate at this moment has them beating Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, whichever the way that tickets. In New York State, 1-800-723-8029. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415 for a one-time professional fee. American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415. From Fayetteville, North Carolina to New London, New Hampshire, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. If this is the first time you've heard this program, we've had a person reference that a little while ago, listening to us on POTUS 08 or one of the new affiliates on the Beyond the Beltway Network. If this is the first time you've heard this show, we are here every Sunday night. We are rarely on tape. And I am rarely sick. I was sick a couple of weeks ago. So we've been doing this program since 1980. It began as a local show. We've been on the air nationally since 1992. We're here every Sunday night. We like to have spirited people who want to talk in the studio. We engage them with the public. That's what this program is about. We have the luxury of 2 hours every Sunday night. And we thank you very much for joining us tonight and participating. Our Liberal Democrat this evening is Mary, the ever-popular Mary, thank you. Mary Hardigan, thank you very much. I did know the name. I just misplaced it. Mary Hardigan, I had a senior moment there. Mary Hardigan is a graduate of Georgetown and Notre Dame Law School, and she is a lawyer in private practice. And also with us is Salim Mulkill. He is born in the village of Harlem, New York, went to Rutgers, got his start with the Associated Press way back in the 70s, was it?
70s, way back.
Used to be with the Black Panther Party.
Way back.
And you are now the senior editor of In These Times and also write with, appear in the Chicago Tribune as an op-ed.
Yes.
Also a Black Panther when she went to high school.
In South Bend, Washington.
She was the Black Panther mascot in South Bend, Indiana, where she grew up. She is a native Hoosier, and she is Christine Dudley.
I knew we had a lot in common.
Yep, you got it.
The executive director, once upon a time, of the Illinois Republican Party, and also was engaged in politics at the presidential level in Iowa and Indiana and Connecticut, working for George Herbert Walker Bush. And also joining us this evening is Kathy Posner. She hails from originally from New York, and she is a former public relations executive, and she's now a civic leader and former supermodel. And what else can I say?
And I just want to say that I own a Panther Cartier diamond watch.
Oh!
Me with all the other Panthers in the room.
We have lots of callers on the line. Let's try to get to them as quickly as possible. Bill has been very patient. He's been waiting for us, listening to us on KLBJ in Libertyville, Texas. Go ahead, Bill. You're on the air.
Hey, not only am I from Liberty Hill, Texas, I'm also right next to a town which is full of undereducated elites, just like Barack Obama. We got a university down there which is called the University of Texas.
UT.
And the professors there sound remarkably like Barack Obama in the fact that they don't really understand capitalism or the way that people who understand capitalism and have actually taken a college-level mathematics course understand it. So he may be an elitist, but I'll probably be willing to bet you that he didn't bother to take a math class or any science classes because lower grades you don't get into law school.
So you think that probably on an economic level he probably is not very astute?
We have to check out his syllabus.
Did you take a college-level math class?
Well, George Bush probably didn't because the euro has gone down 8% since February alone. Last week it was at a low of $1.59 against the U.S. dollar.
So don't go to Europe.
It hasn't been too good a thing.
So what I'm saying is
capitalism at work.
Instead of getting an education, what they do is they get jingoism where they talk about the hundreds of millions of dollars that CEOs make, and they don't consider the amount of taxes that they provide these liberals so that they can try these half-brained ideas like giving housing teenage girls if they're willing to have children out of wedlock.
Okay, Bill, listen, thanks very much for your call. We appreciate it. Let's go to Clovis, California. Bart is listening to us on KMJ. Nice to hear from California tonight.
Well, nice to hear you folks. I just wanted to call. I'm about to go to work, but I wanted to let you know that hunters, sportsmen, shooters aren't concerned about the government taking away their jobs so much as they are the direct attack that they make on the sports activities and the shooting activities of people who have the right to bear arms. Our own governor had a constituency of Republicans that put him in, and he is passing no lead bans in the currently uninhabited areas of Condor Country, for instance. It's these kinds of things that are bothering hunters and shooters. Mm-hmm. It isn't whether or not they keep their job, because most people who hunt and shoot are pretty level-headed people that have planned their lives, and they are, I would say, reasonably secure in their career.
I think, well, you know, one thing that surprised me, and I referenced this earlier in the broadcast, in looking at his comments, Barack Obama's comments about small towns, you know, making the comments about the dispossessed and jobs being lost and that frustration and being concerned about somebody taking their job, so maybe you're not very open about immigrants, certainly illegal immigrants. I don't think anybody should be tolerant of illegal immigrants, but that's a whole different show.
I agree.
But it seems to me, and even bringing in a religious issue, I can see where there might be some connective tissue there. I don't know where he brings guns into that. People clinging to the guns. I don't know what that connection is. Yeah, go ahead. To me, it's way out of left field.
I think there's a lot of political capital for people like Barack Obama to connect guns with some sort of aberrant human behavior, inability to keep from being frustrated, and all those things that people point to when they think of people who own guns.
But not on the eve of a primary in a state like Pennsylvania, when you know that Pennsylvania
but he didn't say it in Pennsylvania. Right. He said it in California.
He wasn't making a speech. He was talking to some people.
You're always making a speech when you're running for any office at all. You're always making a speech.
But as a allegedly smart man, you have got to know that politics 101 over the last few years is that Al Gore was not elected president because of his position on guns. Democrats have been running away from that issue. They know it's a dead bang loser issue.
And this goes back to the original point. It's a very good issue here in Chicago, in the urban communities. It is not a
23 teenagers have been murdered this year.
Right. It is an urban issue, and once you get out of the urban centers, it definitely, I agree with you 100%, Bruce. This is an area that is sacrosanct in many, many communities and a lot of these small towns.
And he's given deference to people who are very enthusiastic about the Second Amendment and you know, are very passionate about it. He's given them credit and spoken well of them.
But he's speaking it, does he really believe it?
Well, his life experience comes out of
Chicago.
Sure. Probably. He probably doesn't, but again, he knows the politics of it. In some states, that's the third rail of politics. Let's go to Grand Rapids, Michigan. Jose is listening to us on WOOD. Go ahead.
Yes, I tried to attempt to explain this bitterness, but for two reasons. But first, just in the past 2 weeks, the biggest, most subtle and unpublished admission of centralized government, socialized government failures have been coming from Cuba, where finally they have installed an agrarian reform by giving the peasants some land with title. Finally, they're going to allow people to buy where they want to buy, to go to the pharmacies they want to go to actually buy a house, get a title, and be able to transfer that to their children.
Yeah.
And while Cuba is doing that, we are here trying to go the other way, to socialize more, entice people to depend more on government. And I think this is why people are bitter. The other reason people are bitter, besides the fact that they have seen the decades of the so-called war of poverty not working and the great society collapse, is the fact that the partisanship is so loud that you people are not allowing the voters to think. When I mean you, I don't mean you, the talk shows, but the both parties. People want to know what the issues are, and people are tired of being manipulated on racial issues, whether they are Hispanics, post against blacks against Hispanics. People are people, and they want to be treated
as individuals who are responsible.
But there is a sense of hopelessness that exists in many parts of the country. It's not exclusive to small-town America. You could go into many neighborhoods of America. There is a hopelessness, and I think there's a growing number of politicians of both parties, unlike those that maybe want to, you know, come up with simple solutions. Most politicians don't have a real clear answer to that. Because part of the answers when it comes down to, economics, I mean, the reality is that, whether you're a Republican, a Democrat, or a liberal or conservative, regardless of where you're serving, whether it's at the congressional level or state level, if someone who owns a plant in your district or your state decides they're going to pack up and they're going to move their job to someplace else because they have to meet their stockholders or they've got to make more money, it isn't a lawmaker that's going to change their mind in most cases. And that's where the frustration is. I think there's frustration amongst the political class as well because they don't have an easy answer. On one hand, they've got to reach out and have their hand out so they get money to run for political office, and they're asking those favors of companies that as soon as they've given the money, they're packing up and moving out of the country. Or they're going offshore.
With special tax breaks to do it.
With special tax breaks. It is a vicious circle, and I believe that both the elected political class and the class that they are allegedly supposed to be serving, they're both frustrated. I think that's part of the real core of what Obama was trying to talk about. Back shortly.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
beautiful melodic.
From Grand Rapids, Michigan to Birmingham, Alabama, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8029. Amy is listening to us in Austin, Texas on KLBJ. Go ahead, Amy.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, hi.
sorry, I'm mucking out the crap. I wanted to say that when I think of what Hillary said about the Bosnia sniper fire.
Oh, yeah.
And especially the explanations, the lame explanations that came afterwards.
Over and over again.
Yeah, I think that kind of, I think that insulting of our intelligence is what is truly elitist. And I also want to say
I
that.
I thought it was just an out-and-out lie.
Yeah, it was
did
a lie.
Did you hear Bill Clinton's attempt?
Oh, yeah.
His
attempt,
yeah. She thought we were dumb enough to believe the explanation and the lie, and we're not. and I live in a rural small town, and I'm a gun owner, and I'm voting for Obama, so that's my message
right,
to
all
Hillary
right.
and the superdelegates.
Okay, thanks very much. I want to ask everybody a quick question then before we go back. Starting with you, Mary, I'm going to go right around the table. Do you think that the growing questions that I referenced that are coming up, that have come up over the last several weeks, do you think there's any chance at all that they're going to have any impact on the superdelegates?
No.
I think they may. I think and Hillary's going to Senator Clinton's going to push it as hard as she can, and I think it may have some effect.
If she wins Pennsylvania and she wins Indiana, I think
it would be a more persuasive argument.
It could be the turning of the screw, Kathy.
I don't think anything that happens specifically on either campaign makes any difference with the superdelegates. I think what makes the difference with superdelegates is whether Barack or Hillary, whoever offers them the best deal to go on their side. You want to be ambassador to this or you need that. I mean, certainly not ambassador for being a superdelegate. But with the superdelegate, they're going to be persuaded by whoever gives them the best thing. That's
superdelegates are primarily politicians, and politicians will be affected by what the voters say. And to your point, if Pennsylvania and Indiana look like, and there's some more perceived missteps out here, I do think, and I don't know enough about the superdelegate situation, and because we don't have it on our side, but isn't the whole reason for the superdelegate was to kind of recalibrate?
Yeah, to be.
The Democrats have tripped all over themselves trying to be fair and equal, and now they've come down to this situation where we've got superdelegates, and they're politicians. Let's face it.
That's right. That's why they'll take lobbying from another politician who's going to offer them something.
If they say the wind blowing the other way, and they're on the ballot, they're out of here.
I think more than quid pro quo is that they'll be looking for the good of the party. And that's, in fact, why they were created.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. These polling numbers have got to put fear in the heart of every Democratic superdelegate. The polling numbers that are holding
not
up right now.
No,
oh,
not at
absolutely.
This point. It's too much too early.
Absolutely. To the point of winning. They want to win in November. And I think, and I'm going to say it, I think Hillary Clinton will take it down to the very last minute,
yeah.
Scorched earth.
Unfortunately, I think
breathing
you're right.
Fire. And I think that is serious. Listen, we haven't. How many times have we mentioned John McCain's name tonight?
Not much.
There you go.
Here's a question, though. If you have a situation where it's the politics, let's say Pennsylvania goes for Hillary. Let's say that she wins Indiana for the sake of this discussion. Is the persuasiveness of not only Bill Clinton, but Ed Randall, who's been the principal mouthpiece of the strategy that, you've got to give it to her because she wins the states we absolutely must have, and we cannot win this election just by appealing to, let's say, elitists or a certain sector that Barack Obama's attaching to himself to. We are not going to win this thing without some of that core blue-collar votes. Professional pals. Are professional pals going to buy that?
I do believe.
Obama's voters aren't going to buy it. The media will not buy it. Will professional pals buy that?
Absolutely.
I think so, too.
Yeah, but I think that the momentum is with Obama at this point, even from professional.
Oh,
polls.
I wouldn't disagree.
I agree with that.
They get people in a room with charts and graphs and maps and historical data, and turn to them and say, "And this is how it's going to affect you, Mr. Governor, Mr. Congressman. This is where you could be." That changes the whole dynamic.
And have these little mini controversies? Have they given? Are they at a point where they're giving cover so the people can rationalize why they're going to reject him.
Some, but you see people like Richardson and Casey who are pro-Obama and many who are still converting indicates that it hasn't reached that point yet, that they haven't been convinced.
No, I agree with that. And again, this is the, you know, we're still in the early wave of this fallout. And again,
we will dominate
the news likely.
There'll be
the next
five more mistakes,
Thing when we get to the general election, and we were talking about this off air, is the question of whether or not the black constituency can vote. And that will be the argument coming back, and the whole woman argument, whether or not women should be required to vote for women in this election. Is that a more forceful general election strategy to have 53% of the women?
Yeah.
What's wrong here and what's wrong in this election is that people should not be making a decision by the color of someone's skin or whether they have a penis or not. They should be making the decision what's in someone's heart.
Or a vagina.
Right.
Either one.
Right, either one. Which should be what's in someone's heart or someone's mind.
We have made history here tonight.
On that note, we will end this discussion, and we will say farewell to Kathy Posner, who's been one of our Republicans of the night. Christine Dudley has been with us as well, former executive director of the Illinois Republican Party. Mary Hartigan has been with us. She is an attorney, and she is a supporter of Barack Obama. Salim Muwakkil is within these times. He's one of the senior editors. Our thanks. This program is a Genevieve production produced in association with WLS Talk Radio and Wilbur Entertainment. Our thanks to Stephanie Lecce and Patrick Johnson for their assistance in the production of this program. We wish get well wishes to Tom Veracruz, our regular engineer, home under the weather evening. Tom, hope you get well. See you here next week. I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415. For a one-time professional fee, American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415.